Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Narration by George podcast, the podcast on audiobooks, spiritual ideas, and other items of interest. I am the much allergic George Taylor with you today for podcast number 75, Otherworldly Tales number 2. Yeah, I got out and mowed the lawn today, and the air in Chattanooga was just shy of an air advisory, and I had no idea until I went in and took my shower, and I'm feeling the effects now. So, bear with me. It is the week ahead of Labor Day. It's supposed to be the close of summer, right? But here in the South, summer will continue for a while. Temperatures will continue to be hot for a bit, although I pray they won't be as hot as July was this year, close to 100 degrees for most of the month. Let's just say that down here in the old Southland, the weather will be a bit cooler, but not cold. Yet, that's coming. And if you're taking off on a trip for the long holiday Labor Day weekend, well, I invite you to check my website, narrationbygeorge.com/books. You'll find some great reads there, whether you got a long trip or a short one. One of the best is the book we're going to feature today. It's entitled The Destined. Now, last week, we started looking at books which I call otherworldly tales. The Destined definitely falls into that category. This book is written by a teacher and his students from a high school in rural Tennessee. As such, it is written with teens in mind from several different vantage points. The parental vantage point might be a concern about language or situations not appropriate for them. You won't have that concern with this book. It is designed as a young adult book, but it's a story which will appeal even to adults. You won't be bored listening to this action thriller. It's the story of a high school teacher, and five young people who have a responsibility to save the world. There are evil forces who arise every 700 years or so to oppress the world. To balance this, others are imbued with powers to counter the evil forces and save the world. In our story, the high school teacher and teens are given powers over fire, wind, water, electricity, earth, and spirit. And they have to learn to work together to fight against evil, which encompasses all of these elements and threatens the earth. It all starts with the teacher, Dega Talladega, before he becomes a teacher. Dega slept deeply and dreamed the dark shadows were assailing him. He could feel the very essences of their beings, war, pestilence, hate, death, beating on him, and shielded himself with his arms. Dega woke early Sunday morning to dampness in his T-shirt. He reached to move his sheets from him, but stopped as he cried out in pain. Both of his arms were very sore, but on his right forearm there was a pain so sharp he couldn't move the arm. Instinctively, his left hand went to the bruise on his right forearm. The pain intensified momentarily, and he cried out again, but then it began to lessen. A few seconds later, it was completely gone. Dega marveled at this, and out of curiosity, touched his hand to the scar he had on his knee from the time he fell during a hiking trip with friends. Almost immediately it disappeared. Amazed, he eventually cleansed his skin of all the scars from his youth. His skin looked like it had when he was born, soft, smooth, and scar-free. Of the two recent curious events, the attacks of the day before and his newfound ability to heal himself, he decided that since being able to heal himself was obviously a good thing, the attacks were of more importance. He went to the library and got a book on epilepsy, just to be sure he hadn't been too rash to rule it out, and went to the park to read. For an hour he did so, without any affirmation that he could be epileptic. Just when the tedious tone of the book was about to put him to sleep, a boy who looked about 6 years old ran up to him. "Can you get my kite?" he asked Dega. Sure, Dega told him kindly, glad for an escape from his dreadful reed. Where is it? The boy pointed at a tree not far off, and he and Dega made their way there. The kite was a fair distance up, caught where the branches were weak, but climbing was the only way to get it down, so he began the ascent. The lower branches held his weight without trouble, but as he neared the kite, he found himself staying as close to the trunk as possible, hoping the thick parts of the branches would be his saving grace. It soon wasn't enough, though. He tested the branch onto which he was about to step and found it so flimsy that he decided to go back down. But as he brought his test foot back onto the branch he was balancing on, his weight became too great, and the branch broke, sending him sprawling to the ground. The moment he landed, he felt an excruciating pain in his arm and knew that he had broken it. He screamed and reached with his good hand to his bad arm, and suddenly the pain ceased. Dega stood, confused, and still breathless from screaming. He tested the arm and found it completely whole. He looked around for the boy, who had probably run off from fright, and found several people staring at him. It was obvious that he needed to figure some things out without too many questions, so he nodded to the ones nearest him, retrieved his book, and returned to his dorm. He sat on his bed and put his head in his hands, trying to make sense of all that had transpired over the past 24 hours. Absolutely no explanation came to mind, so he let his mind flow to try and relieve some of the stress that was building within him. His thoughts eventually moved to school, and he began thinking about what he had written in his essay, wondering if he had enough information. He turned his head to face his computer with the realization that he didn't remember a word he had written. He practically jumped from the bed into his desk chair. The computer seemed to take years to load, but eventually it did, and he opened the file and began reading in the middle of the essay. Power Holders, as they are referred to in the aforementioned book, is a decent name, though not wholly accurate. They are more than just holders. They are the ones chosen by the powers. They are the ones who wield the powers. The most accurate name for them is destined, as it sums up the basis of their very beings. Dega found what he was reading disinteresting and skipped a few paragraphs. Though these five do have their merits, perhaps the most useful power is that which is not, we assume, of the natural world, spirit. Its main functions include mind reading, though there is disagreement over whether communicating telepathically is included, and healing. Dega sat back in his chair, stunned. As he considered everything he had recently experienced, he realized that the boy in the park had not actually voiced his plea to Dega. He had been about to. But Dega answered before he asked. Dega's eyes bore into the computer screen before him, though he saw no words. He knew he was one of his generation's destined. Fast forward now. Dega is a teacher in Ohio. He takes a summer job as a lifeguard in Miami. At his suggestion, two of his students take a summer break there as well. While there, they meet two more students. Dega comes to realize that these four young people possess the powers he has been reading about. The five of them meet at Dega's apartment to talk about this development. There's nothing I can say to make you believe me right now, so I thought it would be better explained by somebody in the same boat as you. He turned to Drew. Would you care to tell them about our powers? Drew stiffened at the phrase, our powers. Are you serious? It was obvious she wanted no involvement in such a conversation. I am. Drew took a deep breath and looked at Candy for help. Together they explained all that Dega claimed had happened to him and what he supposedly discovered. They voiced their thoughts on how unlikely it seemed with every event, and Dega interjected whenever he felt they left out an important detail. He stated everything as fact. Eric and Barrett were obviously uncomfortable with Dega before the tale was even finished, and so said nothing. Dega didn't need to read their thoughts to know what they were thinking. "I have proof," he told them. Eric's head shifted ever so slightly, indicating interest. "Drew, make your fire." Drew looked at Dega, again wanting to disregard his words, but then realized it made no difference and consented. The light bulbs in the room suddenly seemed dim compared to the intensity of the flame that engulfed Drew when she stood. A few seconds later, it was gone. "That was supposed to be fire?" Barrett asked, trying to make his eyes readjust. "It was fire," Dega told him simply. Eric tried to focus his eyes on Dega. "Just to make this conversation a little longer, let's say we believe y'all. What about it?" he asked. "The powers get stronger when they're near other powers. Today, when Candy revived you, I felt my power double in strength. Both of you have a power. I'm fairly certain yours is water, and," he turned to Candy, "yours is air." "This is ridiculous," Barrett said. Eric cracked a smile of agreement. Dega looked straight at Eric. "If I couldn't read your mind, how would I know about the pistol you brought with you?" Candy and Drew raised their eyebrows, and Eric straightened, shocked, and reached for his back. "Whoa, there's no need to pull it," Dega said quickly. "I don't have one, and I don't mind that you do. I was just showing you that I know what you're thinking." "Get out of my head," Eric told him strongly. "I only checked your attitude when you got here. I've not read you since." Eric brought his hand back to his lap, empty. "Why do you have a gun?" Candy asked worriedly. Eric almost laughed. "I don't know, y'all. And this is normal where we're from." Drew looked at Barrett. "Do you have one?" Barrett smiled. "Not on me. We figured if something happened and somebody searched us, we'd better have another one hidden somewhere." "Back to my point," Dega said, tiring of off-topic conversation. "I can read your mind, and you can manipulate water. Try to imagine water in some form in the middle of the room, and then make it." "There's no way," Eric started, but stopped when he saw a big blue tea before him. Its appearance unnerved him so much that he almost dropped it to the floor. "Be careful," Drew, the only one with experience enough to notice, told him. Dega opened a window. "Candy, make a soft breeze." Candy was in so much shock that what he said didn't even register for a moment. "Are you trying?" he asked. Candy concentrated, and eventually everyone in the room felt the very light movement of air particles. "Good," Dega said. "Now push Eric's tea out the window." It was gradual at first, but soon the entire tea, formless now, was outside. Eric and Candy let it drop. "Do you guys believe me now that we are the destined of old?" Dega asked. "Yes," Drew told him. "Me too," Candy put in. Eric hesitated. "Give me time to think about it. You gotta remember, this is the first time hearing of it." Dega nodded and looked at Barrett, who quickly said, "Y'all all could seriously just be messing with me right now, so I'm gonna go with no." "Even after seeing what Eric did?" Dega asked, surprised. Barrett smiled nervously. "Technology's pretty good nowadays." "Ah," Dega voiced. "So," Eric started, "what is it that you're telling us is our mission, or whatever you're saying it is?" "We don't know," Dega responded. "We have to wait for the other two powers to show themselves." Barrett's face showed amusement. Makes sense, he said, laughing. Well, I've said my piece, Dega said. You guys are welcome to stay and talk about it or change the subject, but I'm done. In that case, we better be getting back to the hotel, Barrett said. Thank you for the pizza, Mr. Talladega. Now we have five of the six powers represented. Dega is spirit, Eric is water, Candy is air, Drew is fire, and we learn in the next chapter that Barrett is electricity. All of these characters move near the Smoky Mountains of Tennessee, Gatlinburg to be precise, and they wait. They wait until that day that disaster strikes. A black sports car, followed by a red pickup truck, pulled into a small parking lot, in the middle of which was an edifice resembling a cabin, but which in actuality was a restaurant. The roof was a blue metal. It was a stereotypical southern restaurant. The sign in the middle of the parking lot had Blue Ridge Restaurant written on it in blue letters. Eric, Barrett, and Dega stepped from the truck. Candy and Drew exited the sports car, and together the five of them walked up the porch steps and into the restaurant. The inside looked, as Candy had predicted, homey and quaint. The smell of food enveloped her immediately. She and her friends sat down and enjoyed the conversation and fellowship. There weren't very many people in the restaurant, but one man stood out to them. He stood out to everyone when he called out loudly, "Yellow, look!" Of course, everyone looked at the television screen to which he was pointing. The news was on.
Breaking news. Military bases in large cities all over the world are being attacked. The U.S. missile defense system seems to have been hit, and we're told that the majority of the debris is on course to hit right in the heart of Glasgow. The U.S. government hasn't responded, as the missiles that hit New York and Washington were undetected, and it's unclear which country is responsible. As far as our intelligence can tell, every nation has been hit to about the same extent. Stay with us as...
The restaurant was silent. The customers and servers were in shock, not moving, barely breathing. The only things they were able to process mentally were fear and prayer. Eventually, everyone left, presumably to check on their families. The five friends were the only souls remaining in the building. Candy opened her mouth, but her first attempt at speaking ended in the release of a single breath. How could she finally managed? Evil is strong, Dega said, his voice understandably monotone. They want money and power, I assume. But I can't understand how they would be willing to kill so many people to get it, either. Barrett found words to speak. If every country's been hit equally, this could already be the deadliest war in history. The deadliest war in history, Eric repeated. Y'all don't think this is what we were destined to do? Dega finished Eric's thought. If it's not, Barrett started, I'd sure hate to see what it actually ends up being. We just can't walk up to people with that many weapons and try to fight, said Drew, who for the first time in her life was trying unsuccessfully to hold back tears. No, we can't, Dega agreed. We need a well-thought-out plan. Cell phones aren't working, Candy said, looking up. Eric checked his. In that case, we'd better be getting home. You should, Dega agreed. But one thing before we go. Stay here in Gatlinburg. Even if your parents want to leave, tell them you can't. We need to stay here. Plus, out here in the middle of nowhere, no offense, he looked at Eric and Barrett, it's not very likely we'll be attacked. They agreed, still a little shaken up, and went home. Their parents had indeed been worried and were busy trying to contact relatives in other parts of the country. Dega turned everything on at home when Eric dropped him off. the radio, the television, the computer. He knew that they would need to know as much about the attacks as possible if they were going to try to fight. It was immediately apparent that the news stations were blaming Iran for the attack, but Dega knew Iran wasn't behind them. He didn't know why he knew, but he did. After listening to the coverage of the attacks for only minutes, it was obvious that they needed to act, and it couldn't wait. At first, he wanted to give his friends at least another night at home, but as more and more attacks were reported, he realized they couldn't even wait that long. The landlines were still operational, in Gatlinburg at least, and he called everyone and told them they needed to be at his cabin in 2 hours. They, and their parents for that matter, would have to understand. So now the destined have a purpose, but they have to learn how to use their powers to take a stand against the evil which is attacking the world. They travel across the country. In their travels, they see the destruction that the attacks, which are continuing, are bringing to the people. They help one village and survey others that are beyond help. They also meet Amy, the last of the destined, with the power of Earth. They figure out the attacks are coming from out on the ocean and head for the west coast. While there, they are attacked by the terrorists. They evade the attackers, commandeer a boat, and head for the most likely island to make a landing. They walked along more quickly, now that they knew the weapon they had to fight, with Amy often looking at Barrett and motioning in the direction of a camera. Barrett was quick enough that they didn't have to slow their pace. Screen after screen went black in whatever dreaded room housed the other end of the devices. After a few minutes, though it seemed longer than that to the rapid beating hearts of the others, Dega whispered, "We're very close." Barrett was in the process of disabling the third camera they had come to since Dega's warning when Drew heard him yell, "Y'all move now!" Drew instinctively did as she was told and sprinted toward a rock that she thought would be big enough for shelter, all the while hoping the bullets raining down from the machine gunners wouldn't pierce her. As she dove, she heard a faint yelp but couldn't make out whose mouth it came from. She took two quick glances, one to see if her friends were okay, which she couldn't tell, and the second to see what was happening. She saw a large group of men with machine guns at the top of a ledge, and a second, larger group of men armed with long-clip pistols and machetes running toward Dega and the rest of her friends. The second group was too far away to be an immediate threat, and so she set the nearest machine gunner on fire. Amid the noise, she couldn't hear the scream she knew was there, but she did see him collapse. She quickly moved on to a second terrorist, and as she used her fire, noticed that some of the guns on the far end were jamming, and some were twirling back on their masters, unable to withstand the immense wind Candy had conjured. Drew looked toward her companions again, hoping this time to be able to see them. Eric, Dega, and Amy were in the water. Eric had a well-made shield around the three of them using the ocean water, and Candy and Barrett had found a rock shelter of their own behind where they had been standing. The terrorists were closing, and Drew could faintly see a crevice in the sand that Amy had undoubtedly opened. In it, she put her fire, then focused her attention again on the men on the ledge. She didn't want to scare those coming toward their trap to the point that they would stop. A third, then a fourth and fifth fell from their positions. To keep anyone else from using the weapons of the fallen, she set them two ablaze. Barrett and Candy seemed to have control of the ledge at this point, though there were some 25 to 30 men still firing at them, so she turned her attention to them. Amy was opening the crevice just enough so they wouldn't see it until they were right on it, and Candy helped by blowing sand into their eyes. Drew set a large fire behind these men, preventing them from turning back. Drew hadn't noticed anything happening with water, so she turned to look at Eric. He was still behind his shield of water, concentrating. The seawater around him looked calmer, and yet more intimidating than the rest of the ocean. She knew him to be planning something and was about to turn away when he unleashed his power. The massive vortex of what a meteorologist would call a dangerous wintry mix shot toward the enemy in a fury. They stopped short and started firing their pistols at Eric, though none of the bullets could penetrate the water that was screaming toward them. At the last second, with fear in the eyes of every man, the water suddenly turned away from its path and flew toward Candy and Barrett's rock shelter. It tore through the rock as though tearing through a screen door, and the two were only saved by the water slowing and Candy pushing it back toward the ocean. Before she had a chance to turn and see what Eric was doing, Barrett's lightning strike went toward the men still on the ledge before curving and hitting Drew's rock. She covered herself in heat, and any debris that would have hit her was melted. Now looking at open targets, all the terrorist guns were firing. Drew had the sense to leave her heat shield up, but felt herself tiring. She could probably go on defending simple bullets for a few days, but Amy's crevice had closed, and the men carrying machetes were closing, and somehow her fire had dissipated from behind them. She was about to reset it when she noticed that the machine guns she had melted were once again operational. Before she had time to consider what she saw, she was struck by a machete in the side. Candy was able to come out of her shock just in time to have the presence of mind to blow a strong wind to deflect oncoming bullets. She saw all that Drew had seen and couldn't believe it. She tried to use a gust to throw a man near her onto the rocks in the ocean, but he seemed only inconvenienced by her attempt. She motioned to Barrett to disable his gun. Barrett wouldn't have heard her had she spoken. And in frustration, the man dropped it and ran. Candy blew it to Barrett and raised her eyebrows. He shrugged, aimed, pulled the trigger, and saw a man fall. They were all very close now, and Candy and Barrett decided it's safest to run toward the group in the ocean. But as they were running, Candy saw the now gunless man running toward Drew. She tapped Barrett and pointed, but he didn't have time to shoot the man before he slashed at Drew with his machete. Drew crumpled, and Barrett's bullet pierced the assailant's skull. Her windshield still protecting them, Candy led Barrett in a sprint toward Drew, who had been shot three times since being cut. They picked her up and applied pressure to her wounds while running toward Dega, but they were shocked when they noticed what was happening. Racing toward them were three jet skis, Eric and Dega on one and Amy on a second. When Eric noticed the members of their group running toward him, he used a wave to push the unmanned jet ski to them. Amy drove up to Candy, who, as soon as she was seated, blew the jet ski away from the island to follow Dega. Barrett quickly sat Drew on the third and wrapped his shirt around her side. He applied pressure to her leg with his hands as he turned the jet ski on and tried to catch up with Dega so he could heal her. So how does this crew get out of this predicament and meet the opposition? Will they defeat these evil forces? It's all in the complete audio version of The Destined. Look for this book on my website, narrationbygeorge.com/books. You'll find it at the top of the page under Featured Books. This book is available as a freebie using your membership at audible.com if you have one. If you don't have one, your first book at Audible is free, or you can purchase the book outright from iTunes.com. Other than free, the best bargain is over at cdbaby.com. You'll find the entire book there for just $9.99. Links to all the places to download this book are on my website. Go to narrationbygeorge.com/books. Click on the icon for The Destined. Well, that's our time this week. I'd love to hear back from you. Send me a comment via Facebook. There I am, Narration by George. Don't forget to like the page. Or find me on Twitter, where I am at Narration by Geo. Follow me there. Or email me through the Contact Me link on my website, narrationbygeorge.com. That's our time for this week. Join me next week when the Narration by George podcast will once again be new. Until then, remember, God has blessed you. Share that blessing with someone else.